Hello, and welcome back to Cavern Cast. Oh, thought I'd throw you a bit of a curveball, keep you on your toes. I don't like it. We're going back to the old one. Hello, welcome back to Cavern Cast. Or welcome for the first time. Whether it's your first time or your 50th, you are welcome. Not anything apart from that, though. If it's your 34th, you can leave. Stop listening. I'm done with you. Nah, I'm only joking. I hope you're doing okay. I hope you're doing well. It's a brand new day. Well, it might not be. No, that makes it sound like we're stuck in a time loop. It just might be evening for you. I'm not going to sit here and tell you what time of day it should be. I'm not... What's his name? Father Time. Father Time. I'm Father Cavern. I'm not going to say the other one. I'm Father Cavern. And I just want you to try your best. That's all. That's all that matters. I was sitting behind a woman with bright purple hair today. And she would have been in her mid-40s or 50s. And I think there is a growing trend of just more and more people in general dyeing their hair. Or getting tattoos and just embracing more alternative choices. And it got me thinking, why? And I do not mean that in a negative way at all. I mean it in a very positive way. People always jump to like, oh, midlife crisis. But I don't think it should be a crisis at all. Most of the time, people doing this just want to regain some kind of control over some part of their identity that it might feel like they've lost. They want to express themselves in that way. And that's just being more and more accepted these days. And it's really, really nice. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I do wonder if it's to do with the internet, for all its faults, showing people that there are so many other people doing just what they want to do now and expressing themselves how they want to express themselves. It doesn't feel like such a scary thing to do anymore, which is a big difference to if, say, you've lived your whole life in a small town worried about what people think of you. You'd be way more likely to go with the status quo and not turn too many heads. But you have to express yourself, though. It's a waste otherwise. It's a waste of something incredibly unique. Even if you don't think you are, the only reason you don't think you're unique is because you've been made to feel that way. You can't not be unique. It just doesn't work. No one can have exactly the same experience as you. And all those experiences come in to you as energy, and then they need to be pushed back out. Not pushed back out, allowed back out again. And that's just how energy works. Input, output, it has to. It can't all stay in there. No. Anyway, that's been on my mind. Been all right apart from that? Oh, yeah, no, I've definitely been all right. Thank you so, so much if you have donated to my fundraiser for the London Marathon. If you missed it, I've been raising money for Alzheimer's Research UK, who I am running the marathon for. There was probably an easier way to say that sentence, but we move. The target was £3,000. And we absolutely smashed it. I think we're closer to 5,000 now. So I have upped it to that because there's still a few weeks to go. And my confidence is high. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling strong. So fingers crossed. Please. Are you crossing them? Please cross them. Thank you. I'm trusting that you did that. We have that now. We have that trust. Please don't betray me. I won't be able to handle it. Oh yeah, and speaking of trust, I wanted to let you guys know that the only socials I use are TikTok, Instagram, and what's the other one? Twitter. And all my handles are at Cavan Kingston. No underscores, no nothing. I don't use Facebook. I don't use Snapchat. There's the Patreons, the podcast, and Quinn. But apart from that, I don't use anything else. Just so you are all aware. I don't want anyone to get taken advantage of. Moving on, I forgot how much I really liked cinnamon buns. Specifically Cinnabon, but I'm partial to any cinnamon bun. But you don't really tend to see them that much around the UK. So when I was in Milton Keynes, and I saw one, naturally, I was like, gimme, 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 that sweet, sugary goodness. Which is strange, because I'm not actually like a crazy sweet guy anymore. A sweetheart, some might say, but a sweet tooth, it's lessened over time. Just like the tomato thing I was talking about, didn't like tomatoes, do now. Loved sweet things, now not so much. And that's okay. Cake I still really like. Really like cake. And I guess cinnamon buns are pretty close to cake. Oh, here's a throwback if you've been following for a while. Pringles are technically a cake. Well, they were technically rated as a cake, as they contained more dough than they did potato, and because they are artificially shaped. And because when it comes to tax, products that are classed, I'm from the South, classed as cakes are zero rated, meaning they don't have to pay VAT on them. Not a penny for a Pringle had to be paid. But wait, there's more. The plot thickens. I found myself wanting to say the plot thockens. Then the plot thockens. One of them days. Still said the plot thockens though, didn't I? Anyway, thick ass plot coming your way. According to The Guardian, a year later, this was overturned in court, meaning that Procter and Gamble, who make the little duck beaks, did you ever do that? Put two Pringles in your mouth? In the front of your mouth to make it look like a duck beak. If you didn't, you should. It's very fun. A lot of fun. Procter & Gamble had to pay about £100 million in tax after it was overturned, which is gutted. But it was kind of a reach anyway, wasn't it? Like, it's definitely not cake. It was like the original version of Is It Real or Is It Cake? You know, old Procky and Gam Gam were probably wasted one night and decided to play Is It Real or Is It Cake, and halfway through were like, wait a second, I just had a wickedly smart idea. So yeah, I like cinnamon buns. I had one. Well, actually, I had four mini ones at the Cinnabon, and I had the original ones with like icing and, well, cinnamon, I guess. that would make sense. And then I had chocolatey ones as well, and they were so warm and delicious. They absolutely made my night. I went to a gig that night as well, and I was just thinking about the buns. Just thinking about your buns, baby. Thinking about your buns. So if you haven't listened to Cavan Cast before, I'm thinking about your buns. How it works is I use a random word generator to generate five random words. And then I talk about them with whatever comes to mind. Be it specific, vague, story-based, fact-based. Whatever, man. Yeah, we can be educational here. I mean, I just taught you about Pringles being cake, so just think of all the amazing things you could do with that information. You could tell people at a party. You could tell other people at a party. That's two things already. So I talk about all that while you chill or relax, maybe at the same time, eat a cinnamon bun or a Pringle per se. You can't just say per se. Or is it perchance? You can't just say perchance. So I'm going to do exactly that now and start with the first word, which is shaggy. I imagine people's minds go to one of two places, maybe three. It's either going to be Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, Shaggy the artist, you know, the one who sounds like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't me. It was.
I'm not going to do it. I actually found out, if you don't know what I'm talking about, just search Shaggy, it wasn't me, on YouTube, and you'll know what I'm talking about. Absolute legend. But I actually found out very recently that he doesn't talk like that. He doesn't actually talk like that. The dude has an American accent, a very American accent, and that sucked, man. I was devastated. I lost a part of my childhood that day. It was sad. I've been doing that a lot recently. Well, not losing it, just realizing things, I guess. It's all a part of growing up. Therapy will do that to you. Anyway, Shaggy doesn't talk like that. I still might, I just might choose to believe that he does. I think that's what I'm going to do. Can we talk about how good the old Scooby-Doo films were? Well, okay, not good. Actually, no, yeah, good. They were. Well, it depends how you define good. Also, all of Scooby-Doo is good. But the live-action films were something else. They really were. I was thinking a little while ago that our generations don't really have cult films like they did back in the 80s or 90s. But that is absolutely not true. The Scooby-Doo films, the Scooby-Doo films are now absolute classics and will go down in history as timeless gems in the record books. Well, in my record books, anyway. No, not just mine, because I'll tell you for why. Scooby-Doo 1 and Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed, filled me with such unbridled joy. And you know what? The internet agrees. I see so much meme. I see so much meme. I have purse. I see so many memes and references to the Scooby-Doo films that I would go as far as to say not one single person dislikes those movies. That might not be true, but I would still go as far as to say it. I don't give a shit. This is my podcast. I'll say what I like. Titties. I'm sorry, that felt immature. I'll do better. I'll be better. But not better than Scooby-Doo the movie and Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed. I think that was the peak of live action, to be honest. I think, like, Looney Tunes Back in Action, starring Brendan Fraser, was around the same time as well. Phenomenal film. Phenomenal film. They just don't make them like they used to, you know? I do love how much people love Matthew Lillard. Lillard. Matthew Lillipad. And I really hope he's as nice as he seems. He seems like a very kind human being. Matthew Lillard is the actor that plays Shaggy in the films. And he also did the voice of Shaggy for a very long time. Imagine that. Imagine doing such an iconic performance of a character that you become that character for everything. That is an accolade if I've ever heard one. But the man's got range, man. He really does. He's done, well, from Scooby-Doo to Scream to, what was that? What was it? Was it She's All That? Was he in She's All That? To now Five Nights at Freddy's. I still have to watch that. I really still have to watch that. I've heard it's very good. He definitely has the it factor that makes it feel like you're watching a character instead of an actor play a character. Yeah, what a guy. Okay, I'll stop the shaggy brown nosing now. I always wanted to eat a sandwich like they did in Scooby-Doo. In the cartoon, that is. Did they do it in the live action? I don't know, but that's one of those fictional foods that I really wanted to be real. But more the physics of it. Have I asked you that before? What fictional foods you'd really want to eat? Yeah, mine was always sandwiches from Scooby-Doo, jawbreakers from Ed, Edd n Eddy, and the toast and moon cheese from Wallace and Gromit. The first two just completely alter physics and biology. Like, their mouths just become four times the size to fit these huge, like, tower sandwiches or jawbreakers bigger than bowling balls in their mouths. I'm just bored of Earth physics, really. I think that's my problem. Why can't we just fly? That's boring. I did get a Harry Potter potion making set when I was a kid that you were supposed to be able to make like gummy worms from or something, or gummy snakes. And whatever I made was not that. It was like the definition of a botched science experiment. I just ended up with this weird purple goo. And I tasted it, and I think the taste is still in my mouth all these years later. It was such a specific smell and taste. I was just vehemently disgusted by it. Disgusting. I don't even know what I can relate it to. It was like eating slime. And just, it smelled. Anyway. The other meaning of shaggy I thought might pop into your head would be like a shaggy rug or a shaggy dog. Like a really like scruffy one. Like, I guess that's the actual meaning of shaggy, isn't it? That's the dictionary definition. I was having that conversation with a friend the other day about what breed of dog we think we'd be. I said she'd be an Irish setter because, number one, she lives in Ireland. Huh. And two, she's very elegant and flowy. And so are Irish setters or red setters. They look like they just come out of a like shampoo advert or something. By contrast, I was a mongrel. By my own admission, to be fair. There's so many different traits in me. There's definitely some golden retriever in there somewhere. I think some German shepherd. Whatever the Aussie dogs that Bluey and her family are. And then something really shaggy. Even when I get a haircut, there's something very shaggy about me. So, you can take the boy out of the scruff. But you can't take the scruff out of the boy. Ka-chow. I don't know why I said ka-chow. You can't just say ka-chow. Anyway, moving on. The next word is unwritten. Because I'm speaking it. Ha ha ha. Oh no, but it's written down on the word generator. Damn it. Well, let's move on from that joke. Apart from being a phenomenal Natasha Bedingfield song, which also comprises part of one of the most iconic vines ever, by which I mean the red-haired kid singing it out of the window of his mum's car as they drive off. You remember that one?
Reaching for something in the distance, so close you can...
Hey, let me put it on, because I'm not doing it justice.
Reaching for something in the distance.
Open up the dirty window. The sun illuminates the words that you cannot find.
I love it. I love it. So apart from that, I feel like the main thing to talk about is unwritten rules about things. It's a fascinating concept, really. Just there's no law, there's no actual rule. But if you're not a part of it and you don't follow it, you're a dickhead, really. I'm just trying to think of some unwritten rules off the top of my head. The one that popped in first was what I talked about in the last episode about not hogging the middle lane of the motorway, but I think that is literally written in the highway code. A written rule, if you will. So forget that. One that did always annoy me, which was fantastic to have living in a house with 8 people, was who replaced the toilet roll when one is done. I will die on the hill that it is the person who finishes the roll is obligated to replace it. And I was aghast at how many people did not agree with me in this house. It was the cause of much discourse, and I already feel like some of you listening will feel opposite to me as well. Which is why this is such a fun word, because I might say something you totally disagree with, and you can't answer me back. Ha 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 ha. Ha ha ha. Seriously though, it's like, you finish it, you replace it. I don't see how that is an issue. I feel like I don't need to elaborate. Might make a TikTok on it and actually get the real 411 on what people think about this. But for now, I'm just going to believe that I'm right. I know I'm right. I know I'm right. I have confidence in myself. What else? I mean, another toilet one is dudes in the urinals. Dude, I need to go to the urinal. The urinals. I don't know how many of you wonderful women are privy to this, but it's an unwritten rule to always leave at least one urinal between you and someone else, if there is space to. It's just an alternate version of not sitting next to someone when there's loads of spaces free, like on public transport. Except, you know, you have your penis out. That's a weird sentence to say. Speaking of public transport, don't play music on your phone in public transport. That just goes without saying. You bellend. Proposing at someone else's wedding is quite a big one for a lot of people. I've seen that happen, actually. Although they were quite subtle about it and didn't make it a massive deal. It just felt like the right time for them, which I don't know, kind of okay, I guess. It depends on who you are. If you're not making a big song and dance about it, then yeah, maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I have a very open mind about that one. Just, yeah, not making a big deal. I don't know. I hate the concept of having a wedding anyway, so I would more than happily have people take the attention off of me if I ever got married. So yeah, do what you want. What else? This is a London based one, but for anyone who doesn't know and is planning on coming to London, if you're on an escalator, you stand on the right always. I will put my foot down on the right hand side for, so people can walk past on the left, because people in London are in a hurry. I've actually gotten quite a few arguments over that one. Also, I kind of think just brush your teeth and don't be a dick. They're the best unwritten rules, I think. Like, they're not the law, but they should be, I think. You're under arrest, pal. For what? Just being a dick. All right, fair enough. Lock me up, officer. But the rest is still unwritten. What a banger. Just to bring it full circle back to Natasha Bedingfield. Saw her support Lewis Capaldi at the O2 in London a while ago. She was fantastic. She was so good. Big up Natasha Bedingfield. Big love. Big love. Gonna move on to crayons now. Well, crayon, singular, but we can just talk about crayons in general. One of the funniest things I've ever seen online, or anywhere for that matter, is I think it was a Tumblr post, I can't remember, but it said, in an emergency, a crayon will burn for 30 minutes. And someone replied underneath saying, what about if it's not an emergency? And that is my type of humor. Like, it just chills out. So it's like, oh, we don't need to burn for that long. Just 10 to 12 minutes if it's not an emergency. As soon as the smoke alarm goes off, it's up to half an hour. Who invented the crayon? Like, where did they come from? Why do some kids eat them? These are the questions no one is asking, and I demand answers, please. I guess it would have been some artist who was like, this paint stuff is shite. I want something better. Or maybe crayons came first. Crayons are made of wax, right? But did it start as wax? Or was it like charcoal or chalk? History of the crayon. The history of the crayon is not entirely clear. God damn it, the internet is letting me down today. Why does nobody know anything? No scientists, no historians, you're all bloody useless. The French word crayon, originally meaning chalk pencil, dates to around the 16th century, and is derived from the word crayee, C-R-A-I-E, crayee, which means chalk, which comes from the Latin word crater, which means earth. The meaning later changed to simply pencil, which it still means in modern French. Okay, so we got some layers up in here. Okay. Doesn't help me at all. Just tells me where the word came from, not the actual thing. The notion to combine a form of wax with pigment goes back thousands of years. This is better. Encaustic painting is a technique that uses hot beeswax combined with coloured pigment to bind colour into stone. A heat source was then used to burn in and fix the image in place. Pliny the Elder, a Roman scholar, was thought to describe the first techniques of wax crayon drawings. I love that it was beeswax. Can you imagine a bee suddenly flying past a piece of art that was made from his wax, and he realizes it, and he's like, wow, look at what my butthole created. That's beautiful. That's how that works, right? Bees' poop is made into wax. Yeah, that is. I thought so. Thank you for clarifying. Oh, I'm going crazy. Contemporary crayons are purported to have originated in Europe, where some of the first cylinder-shaped crayons were made with charcoal and oil. Oh, there we go. Charcoal. Charcoal. Get some charcoal. Yeah, why does it need to be charcoal and oil? Just charcoal. Save time. Put the words together. Pastels are an art medium sharing roots with the modern crayon and date back to Leonardo da Vinci in 1495. Of course it does. Old Leo. Sounds like it would be a Da Vinci thing. What an overachiever. Conte crayons out of Paris are a hybrid between a pastel and a conventional crayon, used since the late 1790s as a drawing crayon for artists. Later, various hues of powdered pigment eventually replaced... I've lost my place. The primary charcoal ingredient found... My brain just stopped.
Later, various hues of powdered pigment eventually replaced the primary charcoal ingredient found in most early 19th century products. Oh, hence the colours. That makes sense. I see this, yeah. But what's the, Crayola, isn't it? That's the brand that everyone knows. Crayola crayons. Yeah, bet that takes you back to your childhood. The yellow box with the multicoloured crayons. Yeah. Yep. Where's that? Edwin Binney. Hello, my name's Edwin Binney. And C. Harold Smith had been long established in the colouring marketplace through Binney's Peekskill, New York, chemical works, making lamp black by burning whale and carbon black. These are words I don't like. What? Carbon black sounds like an alternative artist. Yo, what up? It's Carbon Black. It's like Machine Gun Kelly featuring Carbon Black. You know what I mean? That feels like, yeah. There you go. If anyone needs an artist name, Carbon Black. They also made chalk products. In 1902, they developed and introduced the Stayonal marking crayon. I love these points in this podcast because I just say words and I have no idea if they're actually right because I've never actually read them before. So we're all just hoping for the best together. Staonal. Stayonal. Marking crayon. A year later, in 1903, Edwin Binney's wife, Alice Stead Binney, coined the name Crayola, by combining the French word for chalk, crayé, as we established, with the first part of, what is this word? Oleaginous? Oh, God. Oleaginous. Oleaginous. Another name for the paraffin wax used to make the crayon. Oh, okay. I'm going to Google this one. I'm saying oleaginous, and it is oleaginous. You would have heard it in my headphones. Oleaginous. There you go. There's a word to impress your friends with. Oleaginous. Something that's oily, containing or producing oil. There we go. See, told you. Educational. Learning about crayons and new words. Binney and Smith were quick to capitalize on their creation, selling boxes of various sizes and color palettes. And hot damn did they. I think Crayola crayons were one of my earliest memories. My earliest art memories. Many a primary school son was drawn with those beauties. You know, the one in the corner of the page with the lines coming out? Yeah, you know the one. But then there'd always be some kid at school who would always use the yellow over the brown. He would use the yellow crayon to color over brown. And it would fuck the yellow up for everyone, make it all dirty, and you'd never get it quite right. You'd kind of get some of it off, but it'd never be quite right again. Whew. Good thing I have therapy next week. Put the yellow down, kid. You're not Bob Ross. Speaking of being younger and more naive, the next word is zebra. And I don't know why. When I was younger, I always thought that zebras were kind of, and I mean no offense to any zebras listening, weak. This was before I had ever watched a nature documentary or seen one in real life. I thought they were kind of small. For some reason, I thought they were like pony-sized, maybe. I don't know. Or kind of like deer. As it turns out, totally wrong. They are absolutely tonked. Zebras can throw down, man. They're like,
Well, they're pretty much horses. I remember seeing one IRL for the first time, and I was like, this boy is stacked. It's like the opposite of what a lot of people feel about Hollywood actors in real life. You know how a lot of them are shorter than you would think? Zebras are beefcakes, man. They really are. Maybe this was just me, I don't know. Weirdly, a lot of people have said the same thing to me over the course of my life. A lot of people who have met me and who have seen me online have said, whoa, you're a lot bigger in person. And I never know what to say to that. I'll always be nice about it, but my brain just tries to come up with something funny to say, and instead I just end up coming out with, okay. Or I'll, like, pretend I didn't realize until they told me in that moment. Like, oh my God, you're really tall. And I just look down at myself and I'm like, oh my God, I am. What the fuck? Jesus Christ, I'm so tall. Yeah. And normally they're like, ha ha. I'm funny on TikTok. I'm not funny in real life. That's why I have a podcast and a social media account. But yeah, zebras, man. I think I saw in a David Attenborough. It was probably a David Attenborough documentary. I think it was Africa, because zebras are African, I think. I think all zebras are African. I've never heard of an Asian zebra. Could be wrong, though. Highly recommend, by the way, any of David Attenborough's documentaries. I found them especially good hangover watching. Well, it depends. If you're an emotional person when you're hungover, maybe it's not the best thing. If you're just, you know, recovering, just lying there watching these amazing animals and these amazing landscapes, and then a baby something, like a lion cub, gets picked up by a hawk, you know, you're going to be bawling. And I've definitely done that. I've definitely done the whole, why is nature so cruel thing. Mostly to myself when I look in the mirror, when I've been hungover. It's me. I'm nature. I was being cruel to myself. Something I'm trying very hard not to do to myself anymore. Yeah, healthy habits, people. Healthy habits. I don't know where my mind is going today. It's always interesting. I sit down and I think it's going to be one way, and it just isn't. And well, you get what you get. I'm keeping you company. And if not, see, this is the wonderful thing about this podcast. If you don't want to hang out with me, you can just leave. You can just turn it off, and I won't be offended, because I won't know. I mean, I wouldn't be offended anyway. But you know, you can just go to a different episode. You can literally be like, I don't like him in this mood today, let's have a different mood. Whereas with real friends, you've got to, you know, accept them how they are. This is why I think, you know, no one, like, I really appreciate everyone thinking they would love to have conversations with me and stuff, but you know, in real life I might actually be really annoying, so be careful what you wish for. Anyway, I think I want to find out some more mind-altering / reality-altering things about zebras. The size isn't enough for me anymore. I must obtain more zebra knowledge. Our planet is home to 3 different species of zebra. The plains zebra, Grevy's zebra, I thought I said Gravy's zebra, Grevy's zebra, and mountain zebra. All 3 species are native to Africa. Oh, hell yeah, I was right. The most common species is the plains zebra, which roams grasslands and woodland of eastern and southern Africa. I've never seen a zebra in the woods. That's weird. Hiding in the woods, plains zebra. Plains zebra is Shia LaBeouf. You have the Shia LaBeouf zebra. Grevy zebra can be found in dry, semi-desert areas of Kenya and Ethiopia. And the mountain zebra lives in mountainous and hilly habitats. No way! In Namibia, Angola, and South Africa. There you go. Is this... I feel like then... Are they the same zebra, but they live in different places? I might just be being zebra racist, but... I haven't seen any zebras that look different. Specifically, I should do my research better. They're different. I'm going to say they're different. So, because it's like the stripes, isn't it? Well, okay, let's why do zebras have stripes? Scientists aren't exactly sure. Great. Thank you for your help there. Much appreciated. Thank you, scientists. Their stripes perhaps serve to... Yeah, they do. Oh my god, your stripes serve. Their stripes perhaps serve to dazzle and confuse predators and biting insects, or control the animal's body heat. They should have RuPaul's zebra drag race. Someone needs to get on the phone to him. So to dazzle and confuse predators, imagine some bug or some big predator trying to go for a zebra and then suddenly getting really confused and going back and telling his mates about it later. Like, dude, you would not believe this zebra. I was about to go for it, sink my teeth in, get some dinner, and the next thing I knew, everything was upside down. It was crazy. I couldn't figure this guy out. Was he like white with black stripes or black with white stripes? I had no idea. And they're like, wow, dude. Wow. That's really ignorant. And he's like, you don't understand. You weren't there. It'd be worse if it was like a lion coming back to his family empty-handed, wouldn't it? Well, Stephen, no dinner again, I see.
You wouldn't understand, Doreen. This guy was confusing and just... It got in my head, okay? I'm trying my best here.
That's it. I'm leaving with the kids. That came from the Family Guy part of my brain, I think. That felt like it could easily have been a Family Guy cutaway, for sure. Maybe it was. Maybe I've just ripped it off completely.
Might be a little bit of a plagiarism there. I'm sure it's fine.
What else? Because each individual's stripes are unique, their stripes may also have a social purpose, helping zebras to recognize one another. Oh, this is a lovely little, like, full circle bit back to what I was talking about at the beginning and expressing yourself. Oh! Even the zebras do it. Be a zebra. There you go. That's the moral of this episode. Be more zebra. But the stripes are like, they're quite limiting. So I guess they're, you know, what if they were covered in mud completely? Making a mistake would be like Greg going over to Alan, thinking he was Brad. And then it's really awkward. But they can't laugh off the awkwardness awkwardly because they're zebras. Wait, actually, maybe they can. They do that weird lip thing. That, like, what's it called? The thing that donkeys do. Braying? No, that's the sound. Or is that... That was my bray. What's it called? Oh, the flamen response. The lip lifting thing. Oh, it's a pheromone thing. Oh, it's horny. Awkward and horny. We've all been there. I feel like I've spoken about that before in the podcast, weirdly. Talking about horny donkeys. Not surprising. I'm going to move on to the last words of today. I'm going to leave it there. Brave. Brave is the last word. And continuing the theme of conversations I've had recently, I wanted to talk about something that came up when I was talking to a friend the other day, quite a close friend, someone I've been pals with for a very long time, and I was surprised to find that he felt this way. By the way, with the last word of the podcast, I try and sort of give it a little good mental health spin or positive spin, or just, you know, give you something nice to leave with. And I feel like this is a good thing to talk about. I've been blessed enough to have had the experiences in life that I've had teach me that opening up about your pain, your emotions, your difficulties is an incredibly brave thing to do. Not necessarily the bad experiences. The bad experiences are the ones that, you know, they've taught me to shut down. And it was other paths in life that I feel blessed by that have taught me over a long period of time that opening up is the right thing to do. Because it was such a gradual process, I often forget that for a lot of people, especially men, that isn't the norm. A lot of men get it drilled into them by father figures who were taught by their fathers before them, and or societal stereotypes, that showing vulnerability or emotion or wearing any part of your heart on your sleeve is seen as weak. And I was the perfect example of this when I was younger. I didn't grow up with a father, but society was like, oh, don't show emotion. Oh, no, don't do that. When I first ended up in therapy when I was a teenager, I went through session after session, barely saying more than two words and just thinking it was pointless. I had the mindset of like, oh, no one's going to understand anyway, and talking about it doesn't change anything. But what it does do is make it real if I talk about it, and it makes it seem like I need help, which I didn't want. And I didn't realize back then how much help I actually needed. I didn't realize how much I was crying out for it with everything else except words. I was lucky, I guess, in the sense that I was never taught directly that opening up is weak or bad, but subconsciously that was what was being programmed into me. And I couldn't be more grateful to be undoing that wiring that closed me off to the world. I was having this conversation with my friend, and he was saying he feels like to show vulnerability or to go to therapy or anything like that would be, like, he would view it as weak in himself. And when I asked him why, he couldn't really give me a straight answer. And I've had that conversation before, and that says to me that that's a voice that you're echoing that isn't yours. It's been put there by somebody or something or some message learned from way back then. You just believe it and you're not sure why. All you know is it's painful to try and address it. It is painful. It's supposed to be. It kind of has to be at times. There's no escaping pain. That is one of the things that connects us all and that we all have in common. So if we all share in it, why wouldn't we help each other with it? To actually open up, to actually show emotion and to trust someone else with your pain in some form is really, when you think about it, an incredibly brave thing to do, to face that pain. You are taking a risk to do that, at least in your mind. So it's the opposite of weak. Doing the thing that your mind is telling you not to do for fear of losing control and losing safety, that can't be weak. That literally can't be weak, because you are taking the risk. That is putting yourself in a dangerous position, at least for you, in that moment. That is what you believe. That's courageous. That's good. That's brave. That's strong. Because everything that is stored up inside you that you're not releasing by talking about it or processing it in some way will come out in another way. It has to. It doesn't matter who you are, unless you're a god. You are human. You're made up of the same things that make us all human. You are energy. You are literally energy. Not even in a spiritual way, just in a, like, you're literally energy. Your energy that has been absorbed and needs to be released. That's how it works. And you have the choice of how that energy gets released. You don't always have the choice about how that energy gets absorbed, but you definitely have the choice of how it gets released. Because if you don't choose, it chooses for you. And it's how people get hurt, including you. Relationships get destroyed and bad things can happen. The weakness comes from not making the choice to channel your energy into something intentional and to let it run with wild abandon, impulsively and destructively. We are all capable of such incredible things. We are all unique, but we are all connected by the fact that we all feel pain, and we don't need to let fear take control of how incredible those things can be. Talking about the things that have happened to me saved my life. And I will always hold true that talking about it, writing it down, burning it, screaming it out safely and healthily, not at people, are incredibly brave things to do. It's a very human thing. I know I kind of like focus that towards men, but the same thing applies to everybody. And I just wish you the best. And I wish you the strength to be vulnerable. And with that, I'm going to leave you. I hope you feel a bit more chilled than when we first started. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, this one, I guess, but that's what you get. I'm not trying to fake anything here. Just letting it all come out. And something that will probably come out is a lot of tears and pain when I run this marathon in about a month. So if you haven't already and you would like to donate, you can do so at justgiving.com/cavernsrun. And I'd really appreciate anything towards it. Thank you so much to you if you've donated already. I really appreciate it. I'm very grateful. Thank you. And I'm going to go and take care of myself so I can actually run the damn thing. And I would love for you to take care of yourself as well and be kind to yourself. And I will speak to you soon. Okay? Okay. Bye.